Mike, out of curiosity, you mentioned in your speech, just almost just thrown in, that the churches like in Africa, Russia, different places, that their worship is a little different, I think you said, by style.
Right.
Can you explain more of what you're having reference to?
Yes. For example, when I went to Malaysia, you take off your shoes before you go into the assembly. You don't wear your shoes. That's the first time I ever preached barefooted. It was really kind of bizarre to have a tie and no shoes on. Now, Richard's preached with a tie and sandals on. That's pretty close. But things like that, it's not things that deal with the worship as much as it is just stylistic things. You know, I really believe that form follows function. In other words, if we are to do all things decently and in order, and if the Bible has prescribed the way we are to carry out items of worship, such as the Lord's Supper, then by virtue of the fact that, you know, we have to function in a certain way, the form is going to follow. In other words, there's going to be similarities, great similarities, almost identical similarities between congregations in every country. And it's not because American preachers have gone there, although that can sometimes affect it a bit, but it's because form follows function. In Russia, you stand to pray. In fact, I think initially people stood through the whole service while they worshiped. That was a tradition. Probably they adopted that from Russian Orthodox Church. But there are these little nuances, little changes, but they don't have anything to do with worship. They don't have anything to do with the authority of the Scriptures. It's just more of a stylistic. In Africa, for example, you know, the preacher and the dignitaries from the community always sit up front. Yeah, you know, you feel a little uncomfortable, you feel a little on the spot, but that's their tradition, that's their custom. Nothing wrong with that, it's just the way they do it. And of course, as you travel around congregations here in the States, sometimes you'll find different amount of songs, different amount of different types of songs. But as long as it's scriptural, then I think that's fine. I mean,
that Malaysia deal's got Glenn Osborne written all over it. And Georgia talk, Mike, and I agree. A comment and a question. Comment, you alluded to this a couple of times, but when people have this notion that worship involves an emotional charge or an emotional high, that's an addictive personality. And you do have to one-up that, because whatever it is that gives you an emotional high today might not do it several Sundays from now, and you'll have to do something with more pizzazz. The fact is, worship is something, as you've taught, that we glorify God. And when we do things the way the Bible teaches us to do them, we've glorified God. And sometimes you may not feel the best when you get there or when you leave. But if you've done what God told you to do, you've worshiped God.
That's right.
My question is, let's suppose we have churches that develop parachurch organizations or are in the process of doing that. So these churches are involved, our people are all intermarried, our people are all interconnected, there's tentacles everywhere. What are we supposed to do when there's evil influences there, intended or not to be evil, I mean, but wrong influences there? What are we supposed to do when people are being influenced in the wrong direction and keep our right attitude?
Well, that's not only the million-dollar question, that's the loaded question. I don't know that I have the answer to that, other than, especially on a local level, we have to... Well, let me put it this way. I think the best defense is a good offense. We have to continue preaching what we know and what we can prove. And I don't know that we necessarily need to call names, or necessarily, you know, from the pulpit or whatever, although that there may be times when we have to. Paul did. But I think we just got to keep preaching what we know. Now, again, this idea of this intermarriage is a big problem, because we're having trouble now. Let's say that we don't agree with the congregation and what they're doing. Maybe we don't particularly like a fellowship them, if I can use that word kind of loosely. But what about those who do go there and they come to us? I don't know what the solution is, other than just keep preaching and keep, you know, dealing with those that do we do have an influence with. You know, there's some folks I don't have any influence over, so it wouldn't do me any good to go and talk to them anyway, because they don't know me, or they don't have, you know, any respect for me, perhaps. That sounds bad, doesn't it? But anyway, I don't know. That's a good question. I don't know that I've got the answer for that.
I really agreed with what you said, believe it or not, even though I'm more casual in style, I think. But I very much agree with what you had to say. And I think that in noting the different styles, this is one thing that I think is difference between preachers and maybe those in our congregations, is preachers do travel around to different areas of the country and see worships conducted in a little bit different style. Some people stand for the song after prayer. Some people don't even sing parts, you know. Campbell even hated notation. You know, he just liked to sing certain tunes and all the things went with it. But, you know, some people sing without books. Some people sing by heart. Some people sing with overhead projectors, the songs on there. That doesn't make it wrong just because it's different than what they're experiencing or what they're familiar with. But it does if it changes form. And I think there's a difference between change of style and a change of form. And we need to point out, we need to make our people, and us even, distinguish between is it wrong to have a communion at a different place in the assembly and a change of the communion and how that changes. And so, yeah, I think we need to, as you said, we travel and we experience changes, but sometimes people who have only been in one place their whole lifetime and go someplace else, to them it's a huge red flag.
Right.
Just because they simply haven't been taught to discern the difference between changes of style and changes of form.
I would say that while change, and I'm talking about the change you just described, is not inherently bad, we do need to be careful. And this is one of the things, maybe this addresses more of Alan's issue a little bit too. I'm really concerned sometimes when I see congregations. We're in a brotherhood. We're commanded to love the brotherhood.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, it's okay for us to have some liberties amongst ourselves about style or whatever. But I think if we truly love the brotherhood, we're going to at least take our actions and their implications and their, you know, their effect on others into consideration.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we have to ask ourselves, why are we changing? I mean, there's nothing wrong with changing. But again, if we're doing it because we feel our worship is dead, then there's probably a more underlying reason that's more of the problem.
Yeah,
that may be symptomatic of a deeper problem.
Exactly. But so, I'm just thinking of examples of things. There are some people who have done things certain ways and don't appreciate others telling them that they have to change. For instance, taking the collection up and laying it on the table at some places in Kansas City. Mm-hmm. You know, that was their practice. Or going to England and telling them to change their style. To fit America. In other words, I was deeply aware whenever I went to Australia to preach that I was there to help them be Christians, not American Christians.
Right.
And that was the whole point. And I continually pulled them back to the authority of the Scripture for all things and emphasized that. And I think that as long as our emphasis is on the proper foundation and making sure that we have biblical precedence for what we do, then they were correct. But I want to add a different point to what you're saying. One of the things I think that is contributing to this parachurch organization kind of concept is a misunderstanding of the collection of all things. I believe the collection is for the saints. That's what he, in response to the letter that they had written him in 1 Corinthians 16, he said, now concerning the collection for the saints, evidently they had written to Paul, like 1 Corinthians 7:1 suggests, asking him some questions, and now he's addressing that. Evidently, it was already in existence. But the whole point is, the collection was for the saints. And I think we have to get back to correctly understanding that the collection can't be used for any and everything. It's for the saints and has some biblical parameters that we need to acknowledge. And that's one of the problems.
I don't want to open a can of worms, but where I struggle and where I know a lot of folks struggle is... We're seeing folks who will say, well, we'll do this, we'll sponsor this out of our own pockets, but we'll use the church building, we'll use the church facilities, we'll do whatever, and then you get this gray area where things start fuzzing, and they start looking different than what they really are, perhaps. And I think that's also an issue that we need to be careful with. Thanks.
Thank you, Mike. You did a good job. As teachers and preachers and teaching the gospel, and our inability to reach these people that have strayed away, have we failed?
Not if we've not. Well, I mean, that's. I mean, I don't think we fail, providing we have taught the truth. I mean, if we have done our part in influencing those that we can influence and teaching the truth, I mean, it's not going to be on our shoulders. Again, I don't think we failed. In fact, I think we have to be careful with this, but I think, you know, actually in some of these controversies, we can actually grow out of them. We can actually learn. Because again, as I really believe most of my growth and our growth in general is out of in the tension. It's in the it's on the forge that we sort of grow. And I mean, who would have ever thought about hammering out the cup and class issue if that had never been a problem? Who would have ever thought about hammering out any issue if it hadn't been a problem? So I don't think we failed. I think we're in a very interesting tension-laden time right now, but I mean, if we solve this, there'd be something else.
So. I want you to look at 1 Corinthians 11:19. Is this a principle? I mean, what you're talking about.
I don't have my script Bible here. Just read it.
It says, "For there must also be factions among you, that those who are approved may become evident among you." Is that basically what he's saying? Is that the truth often is forged through conflicts?
Yeah. I don't think he's saying that we need to create factions just to prove the truth. But I think that it's in the battle that we see who the enemy is sometimes. I mean, sometimes the enemy is not evident until the battle occurs, which is sort of difficult, because then it puts those with the truth kind of at a disadvantage sometimes. Yeah, I think there's a concept there that might be applicable.
Mike, you did an excellent job. I enjoyed it. Both times. I know we all try to be sensitive and careful in naming situations that are of concern to all of us. But you know, the two things I want to say. Number one, we need to be careful on our perspective that we do not irrationally condemn something done that's not traditional, but it's not unscriptural. And I'm afraid that's what we've done, and you covered some of that in your presentation. Some things are done differently, but it's not wrong biblically. Right. On the other hand, I believe there's an underlying problem with some believing the church is not all sufficient, because different methods of getting people to buildings are becoming increasing among a group. Car washes, singing holiday songs at the malls and events and things of this nature, or doing whatever you can do to get people to your facility, giving them free hamburgers and just on and on, churchyard sales, on and on it goes. Well, the Bible teaches the preaching of the gospel is what saves the people. And to make those proper contacts, preaching the gospel is what should be our drawing card.
Right.
And to all Christians, to all preachers, they should become professional at selling that, quote, product to people. Let people know we're different because we're New Testament Christians following the divine pattern, and your worship here is going to be different than what you may have ever seen before. And I found that tremendously effective in the places that I've lived and worked. So we do not need all of these man-made ideas that some people claim to be good ideas when in essence they're not, to draw people. We have the gospel that can do that. Yeah. Is there anything that you can advise that would be an appropriate response to these miscellaneous? Because if you can name four or five today, in a year from now, there'll probably be 10 or 20. Different things people are trying to draw crowds into their facility, the church building, etc. What do you have to maybe offer as a suggestion?
Again, what you bring them in with, you've got to continue to keep them, I think. Maybe that's not always the case, but generally speaking, John 6, Jesus did feed the multitudes, but they didn't keep them. They turned around and left. Again, first of all, I don't think we should use John 6, by the way. I've heard that used and thrown around as if that justifies doing some parachurch organization. That's not what that's about. But in other words, just because, you know, even if we're to provide what the perceived needs are, that's not going to keep people anyway. So I would just, again, caution people, let's go back to what really the only thing we're qualified to do, and of course the only thing we're authorized to do, and that's just preach the gospel. Now, sure, on an individual level, we can invite the homeless in. We can do whatever we want. I mean, that within certain parameters. But it's not the corporate church's responsibility. And I think Glenn's comment about the money, if we would go back to what can the church treasury, first of all, how should we gather money for the church and what can it be used for, that would solve a lot of these issues. I mean, we can't have a car wash or a bake sale to get money. And we can't use that money then to have a turkey feed. Or whatever.
I agree with you, Mike. But now, if Homer King and Homer Gay and the old guard that lived in the 20s and 30s and forged our brotherhood out of the fires of digression, you said something approximating that. Mm-hmm. If they hadn't said, this is wrong, and you either stop it or we'll not have fellowship, we wouldn't have a brotherhood forged out of the fires of digression. If they had approached it like the postmodern world says you should approach things now, yeah, they might have done the right thing.
Yeah.
So there comes a time when somebody has to say, Alexander the coppersmith and Hymenaeus and Philetus and whatever those other names are.
Right. I agree. I mean, I think always the truth has to be taught in love. But and that doesn't mean that we soft sell it. That just means that we have the right motivation. I mean, I agree with that.
Alan mentioned a word there that I was going to use, postmodernism. It's affecting our young people a lot, the idea that there's no absolute truth. And when you don't have absolute truth, then you don't have an absolute church. And distinctions are not being drawn anymore between us and denominations. And we have this mentality that it would be wrong for me, but I can't say, or it's right, not in my position to judge someone else and to say right, that they're wrong. And so everything begins to be blurred very quickly. Denominations are wrong. There is an all-sufficient church. We've got to preach that. I appreciate what you taught us this morning. And if denominations are wrong about salvation, about how to be pleasing to God, why do we think that they might have the correct answers in matters of worship and how to fund the church and how to structure the church? It's like the Israelites going to the Gentiles to see how to praise God and to worship Him.
That's a good point.
As an individual, we have an obligation, as you pointed out, to meet the needs of the poor, to help them out. And obviously, I agree with what you said about the church. The church, that's not the mission of the church. But as an individual, can we get involved in some type of a civic organization, secular organization, that does meet the needs of the poor? Do you think that we can do that as an individual?
I think we can, providing that civic organization is not something that's, you know, in contradiction to the scriptures. I mean, there are benevolent organizations. I don't know, you probably think of examples that, you know, they're just community organizations. Sure, I think we can. I think if we do that, we need to try to utilize every opportunity to let people know we're Christians, let them know we, you know, our church beliefs and our Bible beliefs. But yeah, I don't see any problem with that. Now, I would caution, though, that we need to be careful because, you know, a lot of us maybe are tempted, and this is personal, so just take this as a personal opinion. A lot of us give to various charities and things. And you know, it really makes us feel good to do that. But I think you got to be careful that you don't allow maybe your giving or you're involved in an organization to keep you then from doing on a daily basis what you should be doing as a Christian. I mean, I may help out some orphan's home, but hey, if I have an opportunity to take in an orphan, that's probably more important than sending it off to some stranger who you don't know what's going to happen with your money. No, just thanks for accommodating me. It's kind of been a tough week trying to figure out where I was going to be here. And Glenn and I are headed out tomorrow for a long trip together. So pray for us, not only in our travels, pray for Reba. She's going to be riding with us.